Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show for you all today. My guest is going to be Amanda Tarillo. She is a registered dietitian and author of a great new book, The Kitchen Companion, and we'll be talking more about that in just a little bit. But first, I want to, of course, talk about some things going on in and around the news and some events that are going on. You know, we're living in a really interesting time period right now as President-elect is putting together his cabinet of advisors and lead circle around him. And it is just absolutely scary. And there's not much we can really do right now except watch and stick together and band together, because numbers is what is going to count. The numbers of people coming together. I know many of you have already signed up for the March on Washington, the Women's March on Washington, which, by the way, is not just for women. All the men I know are coming along with us. But it's just going to be a huge gathering in Washington, D.C., and it's going to be an incredible coming together of people to let our new president know that we're not going away, that we're here, that we have rights, that we demand our rights, that we don't want to take steps backwards, that our environment and our children and our planet and our health all matter more than the pockets of the billionaires he's surrounding his cabinet with. So that's going to be an interesting thing as time moves on. But I have petitions on my website always at ieatgreen.com, and a few I want to bring your attention to. One is to sign a petition for the Center for Science in the Public Interest to try to keep healthy school lunches going and healthy breakfasts. You know, there's so many kids that come home to empty refrigerators, and the food that they get at school is the only food they really can depend on. And it's a very sad reality for many of the children in our country. And so please, you know, consider donating to this very important organization. And again, let's band together to keep the programs that we have in place and improve on them and not go backwards. Also, there's the Long Island Community Gardens Association. They are acting as an umbrella organization for new and established community gardens all across Long Island. There's over 40 community gardens that they helped to get going. And when you're starting a community garden, there's lots of things that you need to know about that you don't know about, like where do you get your water hookup? How good is the soil? Where do you bring more soil in from that you know is organic and you know, free of pesticides and herbicides. So it's a really wonderful, important organization. If you're from this area, please consider joining. Also, Women's Voices for the Earth. A recent guest of mine, Sally Edwards, is on the board of directors there. She was a guest on the show, and this is an incredible organization that is focusing on women's health and environmental issues. And it's a small organization out of Missoula, Montana, but it's a really important organization, and it's working to eliminate toxic chemicals in our consumer products and focusing on women's personal care, cleaning, cosmetics, feminine hygiene, just really important stuff, and we need a voice. And this organization is really working together to create that voice. So please consider year-end donations there. And there's a petition to help block the Bayer-Monsanto merger. I know many of us have heard about this merger. And, you know, this seems to be the way of the future of big mega corporations merging together to become even bigger giants so they can wreak more havoc on the environment and have more power. And we just can't let that happen. So we really need to, again, band together. We have the power of the numbers of the people. We can't fight them with the money, but we can fight them with the numbers of the people. So we need to get everybody on board so that everybody knows that this is not what the people want. So please sign that petition. Now, it's really wonderful when we do see some of the results of the work that we're doing when we band together. And I wanted to share with all of you that finally the Food and Drug Administration has recognized carrageenan as a potentially dangerous product, and they have removed it as an approved ingredient in organic foods. And that is a big one. We've been signing petitions and fighting to get carrageenan out of organic products for ages, especially baby formula. But carrageenan acts as an emulsifier. Yes, it comes from seaweed, so you would think it would be okay. But in this processed form, it is not okay. It has been linked to a lot of intestinal issues and health issues that are just not good. And so we've been signing petitions for years, and finally they are going to be removing that from organic products. So that's really a great thing. And also, New York City supermarkets have introduced a bonus program for SNAP recipients. So that's people who get what used to be called food stamps, but there's incentives for buying fruits and vegetables now. And, you know, that's something that we've been working on a lot with double your bucks and things like that at farmers markets, but this is now at supermarkets. There is incentive for recipients of the SNAP benefits to purchase more fruits and vegetables because we know that will make them healthier. And we all need to start eating more whole foods, plant-based foods in our diets and cutting out the sugars, the salts, the oils, the fats, you know, and do that most of the time at home. You know, when we go out, we want to make exceptions. That's all fine. But going forward for the sustainability of the planet and for our health, and for the health of the planet, we all need to be thinking about how food choices are connected to everything. And they really are. So that being said, I do want to also remind everyone who follows me, knows that I feed the homeless for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and we are coming up to our Christmas event. Believe it or not, this weekend on Sunday, we start cooking for the big Christmas holiday event that we do in Rufus King Park. We partner with the River Fund Food Pantry, which is an unbelievable food pantry serving more families than any other food pantry in New York. And we partner with them during their mobile food pantry at Rufus King Park, which is in Jamaica, Queens. And we do the cooking for two full days here, much easier than the Thanksgiving feast because we keep it simple. We're doing baked ziti, Caesar salad, garlic bread, brownies, apple pie, all homemade, all delicious. You know, yes, baked ziti is not the healthiest of meals, but it's delicious and loved by all, and it adds for a really nice a nice party atmosphere. We also need people to volunteer for Christmas caroling. We like to serenade the guests and walk around while everyone's waiting online in this cold, freezing weather. Hopefully it will warm up a little bit by Tuesday. We always pray for nice weather because we're out there, rain, shine, snow, whatever. And last year it was freezing cold rain, and it was not the best of weather conditions. So I'm hoping this year is a little bit nicer. But please do sign up. I have a sign up on my website. And we need volunteers to help do the cooking, the chopping, and all the prep before we actually get there. We're also collecting toys, of course, warm weather clothing, coats, hats, gloves. And we started this a couple years ago. We actually encourage people to clean out your jewelry closets, jewelry boxes. So many women have so much jewelry that they don't wear that just sits there year after year clogging up their jewelry boxes. So if you just polish it up and stick it in a bag, we have lots of boxes that we've been collecting, and we're putting them in boxes, and they make wonderful gifts for the teenage girls that come through the line, or actually not that many kids are coming through. It's more the parents coming through to get gifts to give to their kids. So it's really a lovely thing. So if you do have jewelry you'd like to donate, you know, it's mostly costume jewelry, people are, you know, but whatever you have, we're happy to take that and pass it on and re-gift it and make somebody's holiday really happy. In addition to my event coming up, there's a bunch of different events coming up in the New York area that I'd like to share with you. December 19th is the 8th annual Latke Celebration. This takes place at the Brooklyn Museum, and it's a wonderful competitive cook-off of potato pancakes. It's a little pricey. It's $70, but it's at the Brooklyn Museum, and it's really a fun event. So if you like potato latkes and you want to come down and participate in the Latke Festival, it's at the Brooklyn Museum on December 19th from 6 to 9 p.m. December 20th, the Sierra Club is having a wind rally on Long Island. It's trying to push for offshore wind program that has been proposed right off of Long Beach area. This is going to be taking place at the LIPA, Long Island Power Authority office in Uniondale, and that's from 10 to 12 on Tuesday, December 20th. Please join us. Actually, I won't be there, obviously, because that's the day I'm feeding the homeless, but I would be there otherwise. December 28th through January 1st, the Hazon Food Conference is happening. That takes place at the Isabella Friedman Jewish Retreat Center in Connecticut. And that's a great, Isabella Friedman is a great revitalizing retreat center that brings Jewish studies together with sustainability studies and food studies. And they're very cool. Most of the meals are vegetarian. They do organic gardening, all kinds of hands-on things. They also discuss food justice issues, health and nutrition. So it's really great that it's, you know, designed for the whole family. So if you're interested in that, go on to the Hazon, H-A-Z-O-N, Food Conference website. January 18th, the Brooklyn Grange is having a beekeeping intro class. And so many people ask me all the time about beekeeping. And some people have come and are learning from my husband. But it's really best to take an intro to beekeeping class. That's what we did before we went and got our bees. And January is a perfect time to do it, because if you decide you want to keep bees, you need to order your bees ahead of time and all the beehive equipment ahead of time. So January 18th is a great time to come on down to the Brooklyn Grange. It's from 6:30 to 8:30, and you can sign up online. January 20th to the 22nd is NOFA New York. That's the Northeast Organic Farming Association New York Chapter's annual winter conference. This is always a great opportunity to come together, meet farmers from different areas of New York and people working in the food sustainability world. It's a wonderful, wonderful conference. Unfortunately, it interferes with the Women's March on Washington, so I'm going to the Women's March as opposed to the NOFA Winter Conference. You're going to have to make a choice, but I hope you go to one of them, because they're both really great things to do. And now I want to share a recipe with you before I invite my guest on. With this cold weather, you know, I start thinking about soup. And so this week's recipe is a red lentil soup with pomegranate seeds. Really, really good. Cooks up very quick. So it's a great, you know, middle of the day. You come home and it's cold and you're like, I'm going to make some soup. And you can have this soup ready in 40 minutes. With very little work. So you're going to start by, well, first let me tell you the ingredients. You want 2 cups of red lentils, and you're going to rinse those and just pick through them a little bit. 3 organic potatoes cubed, 10 cups of water, 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 onion chopped, 2 carrots chopped, 1 turnip chopped, 1 cup of celery chopped, 1 table minced garlic, 2 tablespoons minced ginger, 3 tablespoons of tomato paste or ketchup, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 1 teaspoon cumin, 3 teaspoons salt, 1 teaspoon of pepper, and 1/2 teaspoon red pepper flakes if you'd like a little heat to the soup. And then the pomegranate seeds are really for garnish, but they're great. I mean, I actually garnish the top, but I bring some to the table because I like to add them to each bite. They just give that pop to the soup that is just really delicious. So you're going to start by rinsing the lentils and put them into a large pot with the water, the turnips, and the potatoes, and bring that to a boil, and then lower it to simmer. Meanwhile, you're going to saute the onions, the celery, the carrot, the ginger, and the garlic in olive oil for 5 minutes until they're soft. Add the vegetables to the pot of lentils. add the tomato paste, the lemon juice, the cumin, the salt, and the pepper, and let that simmer for about 40 minutes until the lentils and potatoes are all soft. And then you're going to puree that with an immersion stick and taste it and adjust the salt and pepper as desired. You also might like a little bit more cumin in there. You can do that. If you'd like to add some cardamom to this, you can do that. And then you're going to serve it with the pomegranate seeds on top. And like I said, a little bowl on the side is really nice. And serve it hot. And that's it. It's really so simple to make. Also, if you're, you know, if you're on a low-fat diet and you want to make this without any oil, you certainly can. You can just sauté those vegetables in some water first, or you can just put them all right into the pot and skip the whole sautéing first step completely, and that will work also. So it's really an easy recipe. Please share with me any feedback. I always love to hear from my followers as to what they like, what they don't like, and I'd love that. So it is now my pleasure to introduce my guest this week, Amanda Tirillo. She's a registered dietitian practicing in Central Virginia. She works with clients who have various medical issues like cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, liver disease, cancer, diabetes, etc. And she doesn't believe in diets, but she does believe in creating good eating habits that fit into lifestyle changes that really change from the inside out and end up being long-term lifestyle changes. And so she helps her clients with that, and I'm going to let her talk to us more. But she also then went on to get her master's degree in sustainable food systems from Green Mountain College in Vermont because of her love of sustainable food and eating well. She's not your usual dietitian. I mean, I unfortunately hold dietitians responsible for school food and hospital food and a lot of food that's not so good for us. So when dietitians put together their knowledge with sustainable food systems and the understanding of real good nutrition, it's really a pleasure. So it's my pleasure to introduce all of you to Amanda. And Amanda, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you so much for the introduction.
Sure. And in the introduction, I did not mention your book, The Kitchen Companion, and so we'll talk about that, of course, as well. So your training as a dietitian, along with your master's degree in sustainable food systems, really puts you in a great position to really help your clients with good food. And so can you first share with us what your passion is, how you came to blending dietitian with sustainable food, and why you wrote the book that you did?
Yeah, absolutely. So throughout my studies as a dietitian, we learned a lot about calories, and it was very science-based. And there was a lot of the thought that all calories are considered equal, all foods are considered equal. And, you know, as I started reading and talking to farmers and just talking to others, I realized the importance of not just food, but soil and farming, because as much as I love food, you know, I love it so much that I wanted to learn the whole process. So more of where it comes from, you know. And through that, I learned a lot of, you know, issues that are, you know, caused with just the basic, you know, calories in, calories out motto. Yeah, so I just, you know, fell in love. I learned, you know, I read, of course, Michael Pollan's book. I've read Stuffed and Starved, and I just spoke to a lot of farmers, and I just really got into it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Just like you're saying, you learn all foods are kind of created equal, and they don't really get into that. You know, I am always shocked when I learn that doctors, in their training, they don't even learn nutrition. I mean, so little emphasis is put on what we put in our body. And if you go all the way back to Hippocrates, you know, it's like, let food be thy medicine. You know, it's just basic, you know, you can just sense that would make sense. And it's just amazing that doctors don't learn about nutrition, and even dietitians who supposedly learn about nutrition. Like I said, you know, I hold dietitians responsible for the horrible food we have in hospitals and schools. You know, they're the ones that set it up. And, you know, you might get those, you know, the measured amounts of protein and fat that you, you know, say that you're aiming to get in the diet. But there's no regard to how you get there. And it's really refreshing when I meet dietitians and doctors who actually are taking it to the next step and bringing their own knowledge, you know, and researching to expand their knowledge so that they can really be advocates for good, healthy food.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I mean,
you
just look at the top 10 leading causes of death. 7 out of 10 of them are diet and lifestyle related. And a lot, we're just treating, you know, in hospitals and long-term care facilities, chronic diseases, where it used to be more acute issues, but now it's all chronic issues that can definitely be prevented or at least mitigated through healthy eating and lifestyle changes.
Absolutely. You know, I am chair of our local slow food chapter, and we hosted a film this week called Eating You Alive. And I recommend that to anyone who has an opportunity to see it. Eating You Alive was all about whole food, plant-based diet, you know, and it's, you know, it's different than just being vegan, you know, because it was interesting, actually, as we're going into the theater, there was a vegan group selling cupcakes that were all vegan, and I looked at them and I said, look at those colors. There's sprinkles. I said, aren't those artificially colored? They said, yes, well, we're not vegan for health reasons. We're vegan for animal rights reasons. I was like, well, that's stupid. You know,
you're going to be vegan
for health reasons, too. I mean, it's easy enough. But to eat, you know, artificial coloring and sprinkles and be happy that you're vegan doesn't make any sense to me either.
So, oh, yeah.
But the film was great. The film of Eating You Alive was really talking about, as you said, you know, not a diet, but lifestyle changes. And the thing that's most shocking to me is how they advocate to cut fat out of the diet. Fat, salt I've heard about, and of course meat, but really reducing the fat. So that's why I said, like, that lentil soup that I make, you could easily not saute the vegetables first, and then there would be no added fat into the soup at all. And that would be, you know, good.
Yeah, and there's different types of fat. You know, fat is so critical for our human body. So you definitely want to, you know, limit vegetable oils and saturated fats and, you know, I always say the McDonald's hamburger kinds of fats versus, like, avocados and olive oils and nuts and seeds.
Right, right. Although it was interesting, this is surprising to me, too, because I cook in oil. I use olive oil all the time, and I love olive oil, and I like coconut oil, and I do cook with oil. But they were saying, you know, when it's extracted, it's different. So you can eat the olives, but olive oil being an extraction or sunflower seed oil is an extraction. That's not so good. You're much better off to eat the olives, eat the nuts, eat the seeds, and get your fat that way, and eat the avocado, but really try to not eat, you know, things that are processed, and they consider those oils still processed. So it was interesting. Have you studied that at all, the whole food plant-based diets?
Yes, definitely. With regards to, you know, yeah, processed food is very interesting because, you know, ultimately, like anything, like you were saying, olive oil is processed food. So they're actually kind of changing the terminology to be ultra-processed, which is the foods that, like, Oreos and Cheez-Its and those
right,
foods.
Right, right.
Because there was a lot of, you know, miscommunication. Well, everything is technically processed, including, like, really good cheeses, you know.
Uh-huh.
Olive oil, like you were saying.
Right, but their take is they don't eat cheese, you know.
Right.
You know, anything that's a processed or extraction, they really, you know, like I eat pasta, but I eat brown rice pasta, organic brown rice pasta, and I think that's great. Well, so then that's still processed. It's okay to eat the brown rice, but you still don't want to eat the brown rice pasta. So it's just taking it to an extreme, and, you know, and I think it really has a place, especially if you have one of those chronic diseases. I mean, you know, there's just example after example after example of people healing themselves with a whole food, plant-based diet. And I think, you know, the idea is to eat really healthy all the time, starting when you're young, so that you don't get those chronic diseases and then you don't have to get that strict.
It's hard for people, you know, with maybe limited incomes or just limited knowledge to go that extreme of not even eating processed olive oil. And
right.
then also, you know, sometimes it causes even more restrictions with people and they become ultra restricted, and that could also lead to other health issues.
Right.
And body image issues and just poor health overall.
Uh-huh.
So definitely finding
that fine
balance.
You know, and for me also
balance.
as a slow food chapter leader, for me slow food is also, or food is also so much about the pleasure and the coming together with people. And if you're so restrictive that you can't enjoy the moments with people, that's challenging, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's, you know, I love how, you know, every party, you'll never go to a party without food. It just shows how food is so ingrained in our culture and how we should celebrate it and respect food.
Right.
And also, of course, you know, the soil and the farmers that create the food.
Uh-huh. Now, how did you come about writing this book? What need did you see that inspired you to write this book?
Yeah, so for my for graduate school, I had to write a final capstone project. It was very, you know, you could be very creative with it, and I wanted to tie my knowledge, my nutrition knowledge, with my passion and my interest of sustainable agriculture. And what I found, you know, throughout working in community nutrition and clinical nutrition, is that most people wanted to eat healthfully. They wanted to make right changes. They wanted to do well for their family. But a lot of times it was a lack of understanding and also a feeling of being overwhelmed in the kitchen, you know, coming home from work and then making a healthy dinner, you know, for your family was very overwhelming. And I would find that people would go grocery shopping, but they would just buy foods that really didn't fit together to make a full meal. So they would end up throwing foods out and then wind up going to a restaurant or, you know, putting up some frozen food instead. So my passion, was teaching individuals that cooking and healthy cooking can be simple, you know, with a little bit of planning and a little bit of knowledge about, you know, grocery shopping, because I found that grocery shopping actually is a really big skill that a lot of people are lacking.
Right.
So then I just and I had all these ideas in my head. I'm like, what's the best way to portray those ideas and to give them out to the community. And I decided writing a guidebook would definitely, help me with all that. So that's where Kitchen Confidence came.
Uh-huh. And in Kitchen Confidence, you also talk a lot about food waste. Can you talk about how you connect food waste with nutrition?
Yes, absolutely. Because as you know, sure, a lot of our listeners know we're wasting almost up to 40% of our food. And to me, nutrition or food is only nutritious and only healthful if it's consumed. So you can have the most delicious organic blueberries ever, but if they wind up in the trash, you know, that does no good for anyone. It's just harmful for yourself, for the environment. And a lot of it was, you know, lack of meal planning or just becoming crippled with recipes. So someone will have a recipe for, let's say, you know, your delicious lentil soup. And if, you know, they didn't have one of the ingredients, they just would not make it. And then all those other ingredients, a lot of times, would just go to waste. And I also feel like, you know, food waste is also a tale of how we're respecting our food. When we just view food as some kind of, you know, commodity that we could just throw out like it's nothing, I think there's a lot of issues surrounding that. And again, you know, with planning meals, cooking at home, you reduce a lot of, you know, you could reduce a lot of food waste. And just learning how to use ingredients and not, you know, having the need to follow a recipe verbatim.
Right, right. Can you share with us how you see most people using your book? Like how can they make the most use out of it?
So I've been finding that a lot of people have been contacting me who are educators. And there's this one woman contacted me that she's teaching a basic a nutrition 101 class and a culinary nutrition class. And she reached out to me saying, you know, the book is just written very basic. You know, it's not, I don't use fancy words or fancy terminology, you know, very step-by-step, you know, ways to reduce food waste and to create healthy meals. So I was, you know, I think it's a great tool for educators. I also really hope to see it being used in food banks and other community nutrition or health organizations where people can take that book, find, because I do include a lot of recipes, utilizing frequently wasted ingredients or a lot of recipes, how to use your leftovers. So I really find that, you know, that would be very useful for SNAP recipients and other, and food bank recipients when they're on a limited income, when they're only receiving, you know, certain foods, when they do not want to waste the food because, you know, food can cost a lot. And, you know, they could figure out how to use those ingredients and not feel the need to follow a recipe verbatim.
Right. You know, and I tell people that all the time. Like, you know, a lot of my recipes, I've heard feedback. People go, well, you have so many ingredients in your recipes, you know. And it's like, you know, for this red lentil soup, for instance, if you don't have a turnip, still make, don't not make the soup because you don't have a turnip. Or you don't have carrots,
exactly.
You know. You still can make it, throw something else in that you do have, or just leave it out. It's still going to be delicious.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of people who are inexperienced in the kitchen just feel very compelled or very nervous when they're making a recipe. And that was part of my title, you know, is feeling confident in the kitchen, you know, from how ingredients work to using them to how to store food for optimal storage use. Because if you don't store food right, it could perish a little much quicker than it would if you stored it correctly.
Right, right. I don't know, people are always surprised, you know, my kids always would open the refrigerator door, you know, take a couple bites out of something in the cat, you know, in the container, not put it into a bowl, and then close the refrigerator door, and then, you know, the next day it would be bad, and I was like, kids, you know, and, you know, I had to give them the lesson about saliva, you know, and
yeah.
How that starts the digestive process, and if you, you know, taste and put your saliva into the food in the refrigerator, that's going to make it turn so much quicker than if you were to take a taste out and put it in a bowl and don't let your saliva come in contact with the food you want to save. It will last a lot longer, and people don't realize that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you touch on the quality of the food and sourcing the food? You know, let's say organic versus non-organic, that kind of thing, frozen versus fresh.
I do talk about farmers market. I have a small chapter in the book about, you know, the optimal ingredients at farmers markets and how to shop at a farmers market and a little information about CSAs. And I do talk about, you know, frozen foods. Because, again, like I said, if a food is not being consumed, it doesn't matter to me how healthy it is because if you didn't consume it, it's not doing any good. So I used to work with senior citizens in Washington, D.C., and they always had these beautiful fresh vegetables that were donated to them. And it was wonderful, except these seniors wouldn't cook it. Their caregivers wouldn't cook it, and oftentimes it would go bad, and it would just get thrown out. And that was always very heartbreaking because the seniors didn't feel good about it either. You know, they didn't want to cook the food, but they couldn't stand on their feet. They don't have the dexterity in their hands. They might not even have a working oven or a working stove. So I do talk a little bit how to transition from using frozen produce, which is not, you know, sometimes it could be as nutritious as fresh. You know, if you get poor quality fresh foods, then frozen foods can indeed be nutritious.
Right.
But once you feel comfortable cooking frozen vegetables, you can often go to cooking fresh vegetables because you have that confidence. You're like, okay, I mastered frozen vegetables. I can cook a good frozen vegetable, so let me try fresh vegetables.
Right, right. Amanda, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to talk about some of the other things in your book. Like, I'm very interested in food labeling. I know that's always a question that many of my listeners, you know, are asking about, you know, how do you, and expiration dates. I mean, you go into so many really wonderful tools in your book that people will benefit from. So everyone listening, don't go away. I'm talking with Amanda Turillo about her new book, The Kitchen Companion, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Michael Wald, and I'm proud to announce that I'm the host of a new show right here on PRN every Saturday at 1 o'clock entitled Ask the Blood Detective. And as your friendly neighborhood blood detective, I'll be exploring all the cutting-edge, important health topics, which will include everything from foods to technology to supplementation and how it impacts your current health so that you can either reach health, maintain good health, or shoot for optimal health and longevity. But what is different about this show is that I'll be describing and teaching you how to interpret your own laboratory tests to find hidden nutritional and health meaning when many other healthcare providers fail to do so. So tune in with me every Saturday at 1 o'clock. Ask the Blood Detective. See you soon.
This is Peter Bregan with exciting news about the month of December on PRN. Every Wednesday at 4 p.m. in December, on the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour, I will be interviewing Danish physician and researcher Peter Goerze. He's the author of Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, and also the author of Deadly Psychiatry and Organized Denial. Goerze is one of the clearest, strongest, and uncensored voices in medicine and psychiatry today. It will be an intense four-hour seminar on what's the matter with psychiatry and what can be done about it.
Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm here with my guest, Amanda Turillo, registered dietitian and author of the new book, Kitchen Companion. Amanda, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. So I know you talk a bit about food labels in your book, and I know that is something that is so so confusing for so many people, especially the labels that are on the front that they use as gimmicks to advertise things. And I know you talk about that in your book too, you know, like, you know, gluten-free or low-fat or whatever might
yeah.
be the hot tagline of the week or the month. Can you talk to us a little bit about food labels?
Yeah, so I call them food marketing gimmicks, and I always love, whenever I give presentations, I always encourage people to become the savvy shoppers. So just to not blindly, look at a package and let that food company influence your thought process. So for an example, Nature's Valley, they make these granola bars, and they put pictures of trees, they put pictures of nature. You know, they just make you feel like it's a very helpful food, but then if you are a savvy shopper and you look at the ingredients, you'll see, all these oils and added sugars. So, to me, that's a big food marketing issue because, they're not lying. They're not saying that there's, they could say it's made with whole grains, and sure, it has whole grains in it, but it could often be one of the last ingredients in the food product, which means that the whole grains are not high in concentration. So, they're not lying to you, these food companies, by saying, it's made with whole grains. But, they know that people, when they're grocery shopping, they're often, they're doing it very quickly. They could be under a lot of stress with a crying baby. So if they see the word whole grains, they'll just pick it up, throw it in their cart, and thinking that they're giving their family a very helpful food, when indeed it oftentimes is not.
Right. So how do people know, like, what is an acceptable amount of sugar? Let's take granola bars, for instance, because that's a great great example. Everybody, knows what granola bars is. I think everybody has probably shopped for them at one time or another, whether it's for themselves or for one of their children. What should people be looking for? What is a good amount of calories for a granola bar? What is a good amount of sugar for a granola bar? That kind of thing.
Yeah, so it's often hard to say. Well, with the new food labels, which is going to be really great, is they're going to put added sugars, which I think is going to be super helpful because, you know, as we know, fruits and, you know, whole grains, they have sugars in it, but they're different sugars than added sugars. So just by looking at the nutrition facts label, it's really hard to see, you know, to differentiate how much added sugars versus how much naturally occurring sugars. So I often, you know, say, look at the ingredients. I think the ingredients can tell you so much more than a lot of times the nutrition facts label. Because if the first ingredient is, you know, corn syrup, that's not good. So that means corn syrup is the most predominant ingredient in that particular food.
Right, because they list it in order of what is the most concentrated ingredient in the product, right?
Yes, exactly. So, you know, if the first ingredient is, again, corn syrup, is sugar, is refined flour, you often know that food is not a helpful product because that food is mostly, you know, made up of corn syrup. So I always look, you know, say added sugars, you know, like any kind of added sugar, even like honey or maple syrup or, you know, and poor sugars like cornstarch and high fructose corn syrup, you know, those should always try to be, first you don't want to, you know, you try to want to avoid granola bars that have like high fructose corn syrup. But I always, you know, like to say added sugar should be one of the last ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
Because that means it has the least amount of sugar. You know, you want to look for, I love finding granola bars where the first ingredient is maybe like nuts or seeds, sometimes these whole rolled oats, so real ingredients, that you can make at home because, you know, you can easily make granola bars at home, but sometimes, you know, everyone, we cannot just make a granola bar. We're super hungry. We just need something quickly. So, you know, you do have to resort to those processed foods, and you definitely, you know, I think the ingredients tells you a lot more in the food label.
Right, right. Yeah, and I also think, you know, a lot of the bigger mega food corporations, you know, the one thing that's tricky, and I don't know if you get into this in your book at all, but the smaller food companies who I used to think of as being safer very often now are owned by some of these bigger companies. And so the bigger companies have pushed very much, very often to push things through so that the smaller companies have to go along with it. Even though, you know, a smaller company, you know, might have started with certain ideals in, you know, using organic products, you know, and then it's bought out by a bigger company, and then the products slowly change, and you don't even know that they've changed it. You know, they already have consumer loyalty, and you're used to buying this product, and without knowing it, you know, I use the example of Silk Tofu, you know, or Silk Soy Milk. You know, it used to all be organic. And then they were bought out by someone, I don't remember who right now. They were bought out by a bigger company, and it slowly the organic disappeared from the label, and they were just using soybeans. And, you know, soybeans, for most of my followers, they know at this point that soybeans are one of the most genetically modified, beans that are grown, you know, one of the most GMO products. So you don't want to use that if it's made with, you know, regular GMO soybeans.
It's almost you have to become a food detective.
Yeah, you do. Exactly.
And it's really hard, like I was saying, because a lot of times, you know, people are really stressed out when they're grocery shopping, and they don't want to spend hours looking at a food product.
Right, especially if you feel like you've already looked at it and you've already vetted it as being a good one, and then, boom, it's bought out by someone and it's changed.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why we had such a hard time getting carrageenan out of organics, because so many of the organic companies are owned by the other companies, and those other companies didn't want to have to get rid of carrageenan because that was their quick, cheap, easy way of emulsifying and increasing the shelf life of their product. So they didn't want to get rid of it. But
absolutely. And that's another, you know, part of kitchen confidence is, you know, trying to teach people to buy whole foods versus those processes, because you just don't know. You can't it's really hard to find a really good product, and oftentimes it's very expensive, and it's a lot cheaper just to cook at home, to make simple snacks at home than to buy, you know, those packaged foods.
Right, right. And as you were talking about food labeling and the gimmicks, you know, it cracks me up when I go past and I see, you know, Coca-Cola, now made with real sugar across the thing.
Like
all of a sudden real sugar is like a plus, you know?
I know. It's really bad. You know, and also it always cracks me up when, you know, I see rice and it says gluten free on it. I'm like, rice has always been gluten free, you know. It's just so wrong that they're just trying to put these trends on foods that have never had, you know, gluten or like, you know, a piece of
I
bread.
I saw a sign gluten free by broccoli. Next to the broccoli,
exactly.
I saw gluten free. Yeah.
So really becoming savvy, stopping to think, you know, critically thinking. And that's why just a little bit of education about nutrition can go a really long way.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, how did you first get involved or interested in food systems you became a dietitian first, correct?
Yes. Yep.
So how did you manage to stay weary of what you were learning in school and know that there was a higher path in the dietitian world?
Yeah, so it's just, you know, talking with other people, it's just reading a lot of books, you know, reading is so powerful, as we all know. And I'm never that person. I'm a questioner. I'm never a person just to take a fact and just accept it. You know, even if it's, you know, my professors who I thought were, you know, very smart, and I had a lot of respect for them, but, you know, no one knows everything. And I just didn't, you know, just something never felt right. And, you know, especially going, when I used to work at a supermarket, just looking at the vegetables, and some of them looked really fresh and some of them didn't. And I'm like, I knew there had to be, you know, a reason behind this. And, you know, and good and different produce, you know, when you go to, when you went to your first farmer's market, you just saw how different the produce looked, how different it tastes, you know, sometimes it lasted longer. And, you know, really knowing who grew your food and talking to the farmers was just wonderful. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, when you just stay true to your passion, you know, it'll lead you to the right people, the right organizations. And then I, you know, wanted to really go full force, and that's why I got my master's degree in sustainable food systems. And it was just a great experience, and I've just come out with amazing colleagues.
Right, right. You know, but you say follow your passions. I mean, for so many people, their passion is Twinkies and Yodels, you know, Chips Ahoy chocolate chip cookies. I mean, those are their passions. I mean, there's a lot of people that are really passionate about the foods
yeah.
that are not good for them. So trying to get them passionate about a broccoli when what they're passionate about is a Yodel, that's a challenge.
It is. And that's when, you know, that's why I did a lot of food demonstrations at the farmers markets or when I was working with my senior citizens in D.C., because, you know, if you're used to your ding-dongs and ho-hos, if someone says, oh, this shredded kale and beet salad is a lot tastier, you know, of course they're going to be skeptical. So that's why really trying foods is just so critical. And, of course, you have to first, you know, get that open mind from them, you know, because they have to be willing to try it. But I think trying foods and food demonstrations are really key. And also just education, because I think, even though people might love those ho-hos and ding-dongs, I think deep down they know it's not helpful. They might not know how bad it is for them, but I'm sure they understand that it is a junk food and it is not, you know, what I should be putting in my body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I know your book is available through Amazon, but you're also offering it for free on your website. Can you tell me why and also tell my listeners how they can get it?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I wrote the book, Kitchen Confidence, my ultimate goal was to donate it to food banks, to WIC Clinic, or just the organizations working with food insecurity or community health issues. So that was my real goal. That's why I wrote it. And then, but of course, when you publish it, you know, you still have to purchase copies of my books and pay a pretty actually big shipping and handling fee. So I was thinking, okay, maybe I'll find sponsors, people who are willing to sponsor, you know, me being able to give a food bank, you know, let's say like 50 copies. But that's been a little difficult because it's just me. I found I reached out to a lot of corporations and organizations, and they only gave to big groups of, like, you know, who are nonprofits. But, you know, it's just me. So, you know, I did a little bit of research, and I spoke to people, and they're like, yeah, I would just love to, you know, glance through it. So that's why I'm like, you know, I just need to put it on my website, because, you know, the more hands it gets into, the more people it will help. And ultimately, that is my goal. So I put it as a basic PDF on my website, and my website is www.nutritiouslifers.com. So it's NutritiousLifers.com. So you could, you know, if you want to just have a sample of it, and then if you do wish to purchase hard copies, I do offer for 10 or more, 40% off total order.
Well, that's significant.
Yeah, because, like, I'm not really looking to profit from this book. I'm really just trying to get it out there and just spread my passion and my, you know, my knowledge. Because ultimately, basic nutrition is simple. You know, it makes me sad when people stress out about nutrition, about eating healthy, about not knowing to do. And that's why, you know, I'm like, this book is going to, or this guidebook, it's written in very basic language. It's very comprehensive. And I just really wish for people to learn that nutrition is simple, and that no matter your age, no matter how much money you have, how much education you have, you know, you can still live a healthy, relatively healthy life.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say in your book is your most favorite go-to recipe that, you know, people who are really trying to, that you want to woo them with your book, and you want them to really, you know, come away with something really delicious? What recipe do you recommend?
Yeah, so I have one of my favorite recipes I've ever created, which is vegan tofu. And I do not, you know, it's not a vegan book at all, but I was just playing around with ingredients one day, and it's a chocolate vegan pudding. And the ingredients are silken tofu, avocado, chocolate, so some dark chocolate, and some maple syrup. And I love that recipe so much because people are always like, what, when I say avocado and tofu. So it's just a lot of fun.
Uh-huh, right. And try adding a couple tablespoons of peanut butter into that, and oh, my God, then it's like,
yeah,
a Reese's Pieces.
Exactly. So showing people, you know, that you could take a recipe and tweak it. You know, you don't have to take any recipe verbatim. And, you know, you could always change it to your liking.
Uh-huh. And what about one of the recipes that would be more of a whole foods, like, meal, savory meal? Do you have a favorite in that category?
I do, and it's actually kind of like your recipe. It was a basic bean and lentil soup. Or, I'm sorry, a lentil soup.
Uh-huh.
Because you just can't go wrong with lentils.
Yeah, one of the things I love about lentils, you know, as opposed to other beans, is you don't have to soak them, and you don't have to give it so much thought ahead of time, because they can cook up in a half an hour, 40 minutes, where regular beans, you know, you need to soak overnight, and then, you know, if you have a pressure cooker, you can cook them in less than an hour, but most people don't have a pressure cooker, and you know, and then they have to cook for hours. So you have to think a little bit ahead for other types of beans.
Yes, you do. You have to plan. So you can't
right.
just come home one night and want to make, you know, beans from scratch for dinner. It's not going to happen.
Uh-huh. Now, I also noticed on your website you offer some consultations. How does that work?
Yeah, so I'm in the process of having a private practice. So I actually, if you're in Central Virginia, I do accept Aetna and Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. And again, you know, I feel like accepting insurance is so critical to just reach out to more people, because someone might not want to pay $100 for nutrition counseling, or may not be able to. So I'm really hoping I can reach more people with insurance. But again,
uh-huh.
you have to be local. But if you're not local, I do offer nutrition counseling via telehealth, so, you know, face-to-face through a computer, so, you know, kind of like a Skype platform. And I do consultations, I do follow-ups, and also meal plans if you're looking for one.
Uh-huh. That's great.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of people that can't get to you but could benefit from some of those services.
Yes, I would love to help, you know, again, because I love just teaching people that nutrition, you know, everyone can lead a healthy life and, you know, getting to the root causes. I'm currently taking some classes to become a functional integrative certified nutrition practitioner, so that's really exciting. I'm just learning a whole lot. I'm about getting to the root causes of people's chronic diseases.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, this film, Eating You Alive, was very, very informative. I thought it was really good, so you might want to check that out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
But I'm very interested in the fact that insurance pays for dietitians. Is that standard in different states, or is that just particular to Virginia?
No, most states do cover. You know, it's wonderful when you're finally realizing that, you know, you could, insurance companies and hospitals can save so much money if you just, you know, if you focus on preventative measures than treating measures. So each state, it is individualized a bit, but most states do, and depending, of course, on the insurance provider, do cover nutrition therapy.
Yeah. Actually, one of the things that I always say is they don't save money. They make money by us being sick. I think that's why there's so little incentive to trying to get us better.
Maybe.
Yeah, they make money when we're sick. They lose money when we're healthy. So that's,
right.
Unfortunately, I think part of our problem. I think if we had universal health care where the government really had to pay for our health, then they would save money if we were healthy, and then they maybe would be promoting better health. But anyway, Amanda, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us. And everyone who's been listening, thank you so much. And everyone who's been listening, thank you for listening. You've been listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green and my guest, Amanda Tarillo, with her book, Kitchen Companion. See you all again next week. Come on down and cook with us this weekend for Feeding the Homeless. Love to have you join us. You can find out about the sign-ups on my website. Have a great holiday. Bye for now.